You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast, where the host is Dr. Janine James, Sister Ipua Ma'at, Sister Osati Ankti, Brother Kwasi Crabb, and Brother Kwojo Robinson. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Network, and it broadcasts on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Contact them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. Are you, or is anyone you know, suffering from the horrific effects of trauma? If so, the Little Book of Affirmations, Claim Your Narrative Over Trauma, can help you. This short ebook is a self-help tool to help you get started on the path of healing from the impacts of trauma. It is important to know that trauma is not an event. It is how your body responds to an event. School shootings, police shootings, the death of a loved one, car accident, all of these events can cause trauma in our bodies. But you can heal from it. I repeat, you can heal from it. So go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble to purchase your ebook today, and just in time for the holidays, which is a time when a lot of people are suffering. Give the gift of healing for yourself or for someone you care about. The book was written by a licensed professional counselor who specializes in trauma-informed care. Follow her on Instagram at PLT_LPC and LinkedIn at Patricia Taylor. And I repeat, Instagram at PLT_LPC. And LinkedIn at Patricia Taylor.
Let's go! We'll keep marching, fighting till the victory is won. We'll pour to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals, and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places, learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God, oh Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand, and who sit here, buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Lee Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X,
John Henry Clark, John Jackson, Muhammad. Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Franchisement of all will result in racial domination, political division based on color is entirely artificial, and when it disappears, so will the domination of one color group by another. The ANC has spent half a century fighting against racism. When it triumphs, as it certainly must, it will not change that policy. This then is what the ANC is fighting. Our struggle is a truly national one. It is a struggle of the African people, inspired by our own suffering and our own experience. It is a struggle for the right to live. During my lifetime, I have dedicated my life to this struggle of the African people. I have fought against white domination. And I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the idea of a democratic and free society in which all persons will live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an idea for which I hope to live for to see, realize. But my Lord, if it needs be, it is an ideal.
It comes to us through our ancestral bloodline. Collect the work responsibility for our global economics and political destiny.
I want to say that I'm an African. I celebrate Kwanzaa because I'm an African.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast, where the host is Dr. Janine James, Sister Ipua Ma'at, Sister Osati Anti, Brother Kwasi Crabb, and Brother Kwojo Robinson. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Network, and it broadcasts on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Contact them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com.
Welcome. This is Dr. Janine James, and we are the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. And we are in our first day of the new year, 2022. Many people have spoken about the challenges, the heartbreak, the losses of 2021. But we have to also think about some positive things that happened in 2021. I became a grandmother for the first time in 2021. So that's a good thing. And there are many of us who may have married or graduated or other pleasant things that happened in 2021. But we're here today on this holiday with you, and we are glad to be here, and we are happy to be able to share with you the Kwanzaa 2021. We are in the final day of the Kwanzaa celebration, where the feature principle is Imani. And I hope that you have been able to participate, to think about the days over this past celebration of Kwanzaa and enjoy it. We hope that you've participated in some of the programs in your community for Kwanzaa for the various days. And if you were able to do so, give us a call. Share with us what your experience was. Our number here is 215-490-9832. We'd love to hear from you and what your experience is, but we are so happy that the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, many of our members are here with us in this virtual studio this evening, and we are looking forward to continuing and wrapping up and perhaps reflecting on this past week, as well as have some conversation about Imani. I said last week that Imani was the principle that really resonates with me, but we'd like to talk about this in more detail, and we are so pleased and proud to have among us today, again, our own Queen Mother Shabaka. And we are looking forward to her wisdom, her experience regarding Kwanzaa. We learned a great deal last week about Kwanzaa, what it is, why we celebrate it, why it's important to us. And so, Queen Mother Shabaka, we hold this time open to you to bring on for us some greater understanding about the principle of Imani.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Jane. And good evening to everyone. Habari Gani. Habari Gani is the Swahili greeting that means what's the news or what's wrong, is anything wrong? And during Kwanzaa, we reply with the principle of that day. And today is Imani, the last day of Kwanzaa. And so when I say Habari Gani, you reply Imani, Habari Gani, and ask me what's the news, and I'll tell you Imani. So I'm glad to be here, honored to be here. I am always a student, always learning, and willing to share what I've learned so far. So Imani, faith, to believe with all our hearts in our parents, our teachers, our leaders, our people, and the righteousness and victory of our struggle. And that struggle, family, is for total liberation of African people wherever we are in the world, but most especially those of us living in the United States of America. So Kwanzaa in general is a celebration of what we've accomplished so far towards that liberation of our people. And some people might think, liberation, we're not, you know, contained or occupied or enslaved anymore. But we come together on Kwanzaa so we can begin to realize the many, many different ways that we are contained, limited, occupied, and enslaved. All the subtle ways that we don't even realize are keeping us in bondage and are keeping us from realizing our full potential, keeping us from becoming the rightful actual leaders of the world. We were the first. We were the first on the planet. We were the first to use language. We were the first to develop agriculture in order to sustain our population. And because we had such advanced agriculture, we were able to free up time from hunting and gathering to developing some of the highest and greatest civilizations that our current scholars are still trying to figure out how we did it. So yes, I'm happy to be here, always happy to talk about Kwanzaa and the Nguzo Saba. So yes, faith inspires, uplifts, elevates, and sustains us as we engage in the process of restoration and reconstruction of our values, culture, institutions, lives, and paradigm, which our ancestors laid down for us to follow. That's a quote from the Friends of African Union about faith. So yes, I would like to hear from our listeners what you think of faith inspires. What are some of the things that faith does inspire? How does faith uplift us and elevate us and sustain us? And what is the restoration and reconstruction of our values? Kwanzaa gives us the Nguzo Saba, which is a value system. It's a value system based on communalism, living and driving and working together, looking out for each other's well-being. And so the Nguzo Saba are principles that guide us in doing that.
So, Queen Mother Shabaki, yes. I wanted to take a moment to, in keeping with the discussion on Imani, we as a council had quite a discussion about those individuals over time who have exemplified the principle of Imani. And we really could not limit it to one person. We actually came up with the names of Elijah Muhammad, Nelson Mandela, who we had the spoken word excerpt earlier, and also Marcus Garvey. And so we decided that we wanted to present as our ancestral profile of those three, Marcus Garvey. Okay. And I'm so happy to be able to ask our mother, Asarta Aunty, who is here in our virtual studio today as well, our Sankofa member, who has provided great cohesiveness for us. And she wanted to share with us Marcus Garvey.
Yes. Asarta. Yes, thank you, and good evening to the listening audience and to Queen Mother and Dr. James. And our ancestral profile today is Marcus Mosiah Garvey Sr., who was a Jamaican political activist, publisher, journalist, entrepreneur, and orator. He was the founder and the first president general of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League, the UNIA-ACL, commonly known as the UNIA, through which he declared himself provisional president of Africa. A black nationalist and pan-Africanist, had his ideas come to be known as Garveyism. Garvey was born August 17, 1887, to a moderately prosperous Afro-Jamaican family in St. Anne's Bay, Jamaica, and apprenticed to the print trade as a teenager. Working in Kingston, he became involved in trade unionism before living briefly in Costa Rica, Panama, and England. Returning to Jamaica, he founded the UNIA in 1914. In 1916, he moved to the United States and established a UNI branch in New York City's Harlem District. emphasizing unity between Africans and the African diaspora. He campaigned for an end to European colonial rule across Africa and the political unification of the continent. He envisioned a unified Africa as a one-party state governed by himself that would enact laws to ensure Black racial purity. Though he never visited the continent, he was committed to the Black to African movement. Garvey called a vanguard of educated and skilled African Americans to travel to West Africa, a journey facilitated by his Black Star line. Garvey stated that the majority of us may remain here, but we must send our scientists, our mechanics, and our artisans, and let them build railroads, let them build the great educational and other institutions necessary, after which other members of the African diaspora could join them. He was aware that the majority of African Americans would not want to move to Africa until it had the more modern comforts that they had, that we had become accustomed to in the United States. Through the UNIA, he discussed plans for migration to Liberia. Garveyist ideas became increasingly popular, and the UNIA grew in membership. However, his Black separatist views and his relationship with white races in the interest of advancing the goal of racial separatism divided Garvey from prominent African-American civil rights activists. Committed to the belief that Black people needed to secure financial independence from white dominant society, Garvey launched various businesses in the United States, including the Negro Factories Corporation and the Negro World Newspaper. In 1919, he became president of the Black Star Line, shipping and passenger company designed to forge a link between North America and Africa and facilitate African-American migration to Liberia. In 1923, Garvey was convicted of mail fraud for selling company stock and imprisoned in the United States Penitentiary, Atlanta, for nearly 2 years. Many commentators have argued that the trial was politically motivated. Garvey was deported to Jamaica in 1927 when he settled in Kingston with his wife, Amy Jacques. Garvey continued his activism and established the People's Political Party in 1929, briefly serving as a city councilor. When the UNIA, in increasing financial difficulty, in 1935, he relocated to London, where he died June 10, 1940. Although in 1964, his body was returned to Jamaica for reburial in Kingston's National Heroes Park. Garvey was a controversial figure. He nevertheless received praise for encouraging a sense of pride and worth among Africans and the African diaspora amid widespread poverty, discrimination, and colonialism. In Jamaica, he was widely regarded as a national hero. His ideas exerted a considerable influence on such movements as Rastafari, the Nation of Islam, and the Black Power movement. During a trip to Jamaica, Martin Luther King Jr. and his wife, Coretta Scott King, visited Garvey's shrine on June 20th, 1965, and laid a wreath. In a speech, he told the audience that Garvey was the first man of color to lead and develop a mass movement. He was the first man on a mass scale and level to give millions of Negroes a sense of dignity and destiny and make the Negro feel he was somebody. Marcus Mosiah Garvey Sr. provided a living example of the Nguzo Saba principles of Kwanzaa. A member of the 100 greatest black people of the world. May he rest in peace and power. Thank you.
Mother Asante, that was simply magnificent. That presentation, I've heard about Garvey over these many years, and I didn't really have a sense of him in the manner in which you have laid out for us this history. And so I'm most grateful to be enlightened by you and your review of his history, which I'm sure there's much more, and I encourage others to take the time to read more about this man who served to embody many of the principles, as Mother Asante has mentioned to us today. And I think it's good that we have an example of Imani. We have an example of the Nguzo Saba. And Queen Mother Shabaka, I know we interrupted your presentation, but I think it was good that we got a chance to get into the spirit of and an understanding of Imani, have an example of Imani as we had from the spoken word and as we have from the ancestral profile, and to get us more open in our thoughts about why Kwanzaa is important for us to learn more about, to participate in. And I wondered if you've had any reports from some of the activities that may have taken place in Milwaukee over this past week celebration as we move into our close with Imani and some of the other members of Sankofa Council, if you've had some experiences that you participated in and heard about or others who have, please share them with us today. So Queen Mother Shabaka, we're open. We're open and receptive to absorb what you want to share with us.
Thank you. Thank you again. I'm just really relishing on that ancestral profile of Marcus Garvey, because he was an exemplary example of Imani. He had so much faith in our people that inspired him and uplifted, he helped to uplift our people. He was uplifted by his faith in our people, and he in turn developed programs and organizations that help to uplift our people. So even in the face of controversy and opposition, he stuck with his ideal. And that's what is really a great example of Imani. The same thing with Nelson Mandela. That speech that we heard was his, I guess you would call it, closing argument at the trial that he and the ANC were tried for treason in South Africa because of their activities
as freedom fighters to liberate the black people of South Africa from apartheid. And the last words got cut off when he was saying that, you know, democracy and freedom for all was an ideal that he hoped to see realized in his lifetime. And then he said, but if not, he was prepared to die for it. And there was another interview with Nelson Mandela, in which the journalist asked him about him saying that he was prepared to die for it. And he said that he said he had to say that because he really thought that they were going to hang him and all of the ANC members. He thought that they were going to be all hung. And so he was saying that when he went out, he couldn't go out as a wimp. He said, freedom fighters have a responsibility to go out strong and brave. And so he was saying that's what he had to say. But it's clear that he really believed that when he said it, that he fought for the freedom of South African people. He dedicated his whole life to it. So that's another exemplary example of Imani, faith. He had faith in his struggle. So I'm just curious, what ideal do we hold that we're willing to dedicate our lives to, that we're willing to work at and struggle for until we reach the realization of it? As in the definition of Imani says, we have to believe in the righteousness and victory of our struggle. And righteousness, Dr. Maulana Karenga talks about that all the time. He says that we, as Africans living in America, have the responsibility to bring good to the world, that the world needs us. And I thought about that because I've heard it said that whenever America and the Western world gets in trouble and can't get themselves out, they call on us. They call on us to get them out. So, you know, the West is going to be in big trouble. So we Africans need to prepare to take the leadership when the opportunity presents itself. And we have to have faith that we can do that. We've been down for so long that we don't, you know, many times we don't even think about running our own lives. We're always, well, a lot of times we're comparing ourselves to the powers that be. And we're, you know, they have to learn from us. Africans are the ones that have been holistic and who are viewing the world through the eyes of Ma'at and have learned to interact with the world through the laws of Ma'at. So that's the faith that I think we need to have. We need to know that we, as African people, have everything we need to be free and self-sufficient people. And I'll ask the question again, what are we willing to dedicate our lives to? What are we willing to struggle for? What ideal do we hold that we're willing to give our lives for? That's what I think Imani demands of us. So these Nguzo Saba are not frivolous. You know, we throw them around a lot. but if we take them to their full potential, it requires, as they said in one of the quotes about restoring the paradigm that our ancestors laid down, that's what the Nguzo Saba will do for us if we study it and study our behavior and study it and study our behavior and study it and study our behavior and restore our behavior to that of our ancestral legacy. So I want to hear people chime in. What is it that we're willing to, what ideal are we willing to dedicate ourselves to? Anybody?
I could chime in.
Yes, please.
You know what? I was just saying amen and amen and amen and everything you were saying. Ashe, ashe, ashe. I took the liberty. I went online and looked at the definition of faith. And normally people think that, you know, at least I used to think faith was something that you had with God. But you could actually have faith in something other than God. You can have faith in a concept. And when I looked at Kwanzaa as a concept or paradigm, I didn't have as much faith because I was ignorant. You know, I thought, like, you know, Christmas was a big celebration and Kwanzaa was something that somebody just made up, you know. But actually, Christmas has no intentionality at all. It's based on a lot of pagan celebrations that kind of, by default, came together from different cultures. But it has, it's like a Frankenstein type celebration. But Kwanzaa was designed, it was intentionally designed to, like you say, have us restore ourselves to our culture and our principles that cause nations to last for thousands of years.
Yeah.
And so when I was looking at Marcus Garvey, he had his vision. Out of his vision, he had that plan. Obviously, he had faith in that plan. And but there was reciprocity because people saw how committed he was, and they had faith in his plan. They had faith in him. So
exactly.
It's like faith, Imani, is so important for us to work together and be successful, because someone is going to have a vision or a plan, and then they can't carry it out by themselves. So the people must be inspired to work together to make that happen. So faith is going back and forth. It's reciprocal.
Yeah.
And when I look at the lane that I'm running in is I'm trying to focus in my old age, peace, healing, and collaboration. Because I think once we can have peace in our community, peace and harmony, and then we can have unity and collaboration, then we can provide whatever we need. There will be nothing missing because we have the ability to do that. So I have faith in our ability to have peace and to heal ourselves and to work in harmony.
Yes, and you know, peace and unity are the foundational ideals of our ancestors, of our ancient ancestors in Kemet. Peace can be to be realized when we realize who we are as divine beings. When we realize that we are divine, that we are made in the likeness of God, and that we have all of the talents and powers, not in the same degree, but in the same quality of talent that the Supreme Being has. When we realize that, and when we realize that peace is our essential nature, peace is who we are. Isn't that the way the Supreme Being is? At peace?
Yeah.
And if we're made in its likeness, then we have to be at peace. So all these, the paradigms that we buy into, that I have to have closure to this situation in order for me to be at peace. That's not true. You are peace. You don't have to have anything to be at peace. There's a woman that wrote a book called Happy for No Reason, you know, and we can be at peace for no reason. And once you're at peace, once you realize that peace is our natural God-given response, no matter what happens to anybody and everybody else, no matter what fails to happen, we are essentially at peace. And having that peace enhances our intellect, enhances our health, enhances our ability to make the right decisions. So in your peace and unity and collaboration, you're on the right track, because we have to learn, and it's so healing when we learn how to achieve that state of peace and to believe that we have the powers and the talent and the resources that we need to do it. And once we get that paradigm established, then the rest is a piece of cake. So, yes, you're on the right track, Brother Kojo.
And my grandmother said, you could be on the right track, but if you don't keep moving, you might get run over. You know, last night, I listened for 15 minutes, all of this high-powered weapons being shot in the air. And I was thinking, it was just like a war zone. And today is February 1st. We already have one. And the day isn't over yet, but we got one homicide and three other people were shot. So we're on the right track.
But that comes from the paradigm of indiscriminate imitation. Mm. We imitate what we see the majority. We need to start talking about the majority since they talk about the minority. So what we see the majority do, we think we got to do it better. You know, we don't examine the paradigms out of which the majority operate. We have to operate out of African paradigms, which is holistic, which is interdependent. I am because we are, you know, and understanding that that peace is our nature. And when we're at peace, then we have unity with all. Because we know then nothing can disturb our peace. So we got to get those African paradigms in the media.
So we are at the top of the hour, and I'm going to let you hold that thought so we can wrap that up. And we're going to start our top of the hour and come back with a sponsor announcement.
7 days at Kwanzaa.
Happy Kwanzaa, oh.
7 days at Kwanzaa.
Are you, or is anyone you know, suffering from the horrific effects of trauma? If so, the Little Book of Affirmations, Claim Your Narrative Over Trauma, can help you. This short ebook is a self-help tool to help you get started on the path of healing from the impacts of trauma. It is important to know that trauma is not an event. It is how your body responds to an event. School shootings, police shootings, the death of a loved one, car accident, all of these events can cause trauma in our bodies. But you can heal from it. I repeat, you can heal from it. So go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble to purchase your ebook today and just in time for the holidays, which is a time when a lot of people are suffering. Give the gift of healing for yourself or for someone you care about. The book was written by a licensed professional counselor who specializes in trauma-informed care. Follow her on Instagram at PLT_LPC and LinkedIn at Patricia Taylor. And I repeat, Instagram at PLT_LPC. And LinkedIn at Patricia Taylor. Listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast, where the host is Dr. Janine James, Sister Ipua Ma'at, Sister Osati Anti, Brother Kwasi Crabb, and Brother Kwojo Robinson. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Network, and it broadcasts on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Contact them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com.
Welcome. We are back, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, and we have been here talking about Imani, the seventh principle of Kwanzaa, and we have our Sankofa Council members, many of them who are here with us in our virtual studio today, and we are reflecting about Kwanzaa, about Imani, and sharing some thoughts. And we welcome our listeners to join us with their thoughts about Kwanzaa. Our number here is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We also have an email address, which is Sankofa Council MKE
kwanzaa@gmail.com. So we are here talking about Imani. We're going to wrap up on this and open to another discussion, and that's about the Sankofa Council. But Queen Mother Shabaka put out before us a question, which Brother Kwojo was addressing for us. Brother Kwojo, did you have some more you wanted to add to that? I know that Sister Afua Mayad is here with us as well. And if she has some thoughts about the question of what it is that we have the faith in, that we're willing to, as Nelson Mandela addressed, is there something that is so potent for you that you'd be willing to die for in that cause? Anybody in the studio have some thoughts on that?
I have some thought on it in reflecting on one of Marcus Garvey's quotes, and that is, it falls to our lot to tear off the shackles that bind Mother Africa. Can you do it? And I think when we talk about, when I think of Mother Africa, I think of myself as a Black woman in the United States experience and the shackles that is my obligation to first tear the shackles from myself and be available to work with others in helping them or encouraging them to do the same, starting with, you know, myself, my family, my friend, family and friends, and the community, because I believe that is what the struggle is in keeping faith in what Imani stands for, and in believing in my heart in the righteousness of the struggle and then the victory of the struggle. And I think that that's part of the commitment that I have to, you know, based on this quote that speaks to me of tearing the shackles that bind us.
Thank you. Thank you. Those were wonderful thoughts that you have. And I'm glad you have been joining us and pondering that question. And I see that Brother Kwasi is here in our studio. He's joined us. And we're here talking about Imani. We're talking about faith. We're talking about it in its context beyond a religious or a spiritual component. And Brother Kwasi, I'm sure that there have been many times that you had to rely on faith to keep you alive as it relates to your career, and I'm sure there are other examples of that, but are you able to share some thoughts on Imani with us?
Yes, most definitely. I want to just say, so glad that so many of us are here into this new year, and just thankful to be taking in breath for another day. And I've been through a lot of different things, and my faith has always moved me where I made some decisions that helped. And at times when I didn't know any better, and I someone just would come and fill those gaps for me at different times and places and spaces in my life. And so I'm pretty blessed and very understanding that you must have faith, whether, you know, on the spiritual end and in yourself. And all that comes from so many different experiences that you have and the people that you encounter that, you know, builds you and family, you know, those type of things. So I'll leave it at that. And thank you for the work that you guys do and continue to set.
Thank you, brother. Fozzie. Yes, Queen Mother.
Queen Mother, I just wanted to say that we talked about Marcus Garvey and we talked about Nelson Mandela as well-known charismatic examples of Imani. But Imani doesn't have to be charismatic, and it doesn't have to be an individual. I think another exemplary example of Imani and the Nguzo Saba is the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. The elders that have come together to begin to learn about our culture, which is the fundamental source of our people's identity and purpose and direction, and not only to learn, but to continue to work and build institutions, nation building. So I would like to commend the Sankofa Council for the work that you've been doing over the past couple of years in establishing African paradigms and making commitments to work to build institutions, and those institutions come together as nation building. So, yes, we have lesser well-known examples of Imani, but no less important because our elders are the cornerstone of our nation. And even the part about Imani that talks about believing in our parents and our teachers and our leaders, the elders are the connection to our parents, our teachers, and our leaders. They are the stewards of the society. And their priority is to be caretakers and gatekeepers and stewards of African culture. That is the values, the principles, rituals, traditions, histories, paradigms, cosmologies, worldviews, languages. Our culture is so rich. All of those components make up African culture. And an elder council in African culture are, you know, it's the elders who are esteemed for keeping the community together. So my hat, my proverbial hat goes off to the Sankofa Council of Elders, because so often we find elders that once they retire from their professional life, they go on vacation and they don't continue the struggle. So, bravo, Elders Council. And so I'd like for the council to chime in on some of the things that have been accomplished by the Sankofa Council over the time that they have come together. That's what Kwanzaa is supposed to be. It's supposed to be coming back and reporting to the community, to the nation, what we've accomplished. So let's have some reporting.
Habara Ghani, family.
Imani.
Thank you for that, Queen Mother. Greeting to everyone. This is Sister Ifua Ma'at. And it's kind of hard to follow what Queen Mother Shabaka just spoke about, but so true in everything that she said. The Sankofa Council, we have been together for 3 years strong, probably 3 years plus, but I know 3 years strong. And the way that we have grown together, and I'm speaking from personal, of how internally the council has held me up, because I am a caregiver, or I say care advocate, for my mother, and the information that has been shared with me, the understanding of my frustration of dealing with the medical system, has eased a lot of my stress. I've been quarantined, and I was just talking to another member, and Queen Mother brought me a care package. Queen Mother is my elder, yet she came out of her home to bring me a care package. And that meant so much, because seeing her outside in the dark, I mean, it wasn't pitch dark, but it was definitely after five, and it was dark, and she loves me enough. She's showing Imani to come out of her home and bring me smoothies and some other supplements. It touched me dearly. Now, from an external standpoint, our council has definitely discussed and shown love to our community in our discussions and our meetings, forming committees in order to address some of the things that we see. And we've pivoted on a lot of thought and committees based on the feedback of our community. For example, I'm the co-chair for the Communiversity, which is our educational committee, and our purpose when we started to develop the committee is to establish an educational school, if you will, to work on our purpose and work under our purpose and mission statement of the Sankofa Committee, to develop self-education, learning about who we are. Mbutu, I am because we are. And we all, even though you don't identify yourself as an African, black under the umbrella, and you are a descendant of Africa for your bloodline, not just your skin tone, there's a bloodline that crosses the Atlantic. Even though our nationality is American, ethnicity, our ethnic ethnicity is of Mother Africa. There are certain genetics, and Dr. James would be the one to go into more detail, but genetically there are things in our DNA that connects us to Mother Africa and the other continents. When you think about North America, South America, when you think about the language, geographics, cultural traditions, and we do have some that our ancestors brought here and passed on. And a lot of us don't even understand why or where it came from. We just know it's a family tradition. But a lot of that is African culture and traditions as well, customs. So I'm going to step back for a minute and allow someone else to step in. But that's what Imani has been for me. I've been out in this community working for years, and I have been covered by my black people in situations where it could have gone wrong. But I've had the men step up. I've had the women stand beside me. So I love my people dearly.
Sister Afua, that is so poignant as you are sharing what the Sankofa Council has meant to you, what has allowed you to continue to participate, to engage out of a love for your community, for our community, and that which you can do to make a difference. And so we all seem to be learning from one another, and I hear it as we get together. We share a discussion of things that are going on in the community, as well as address some of the ways that we have to provide some support as others are attempting to do that which will serve to enrich us. And I think that we certainly have done it in different ways. There are, as you mentioned, there are committees that we have formed over the last year, couple of years, and some of us have greater experience and interest in some of those committees than others, but it still has provided for us an opportunity to learn more about those things that perhaps we don't know as much, and it will allow us to share that with those that we are around to enrich them and empower them. Our committees that we have formed, and you mentioned the committee that you have been involved with, and we have a committee that's language and culture. And we heard some example of that as we were listening to some of the Swahili words associated with some greetings. And Queen Mother Shabaka has worked diligently with bringing language and culture to us. Queen Mother Shabaka, can you give us a little more detail about the kinds of things this committee has done?
Sure. The Language and Culture Committee started out
as just the Swahili committee. And so we set as a goal to learn Swahili, at least enough Swahili to be able to conduct the Kwanzaa program in Kiswahili. Now, one of the reasons for learning Kiswahili, for learning an African language, is we're probably the only people in this country who only have one language. And that's because our language has been, you know, taken away from us. People, when we were captured, we were forbidden to speak our native languages. And so they were taken from us. And we were given the language of our enslavers. And we've been practicing that language for so long that we've forgotten that we even had our own language. But hopefully, when you're in the supermarket, or if you go in the nail shop and the Vietnamese are speaking their language, I mean, they are nail technicians, but they are speaking their own language. You go to the taco shop, and the Hispanic people are speaking their language. You go to the beauty supply place, they're speaking their language, and we're the only people that can only speak the slave master's language, the oppressor's language. And that has to be one of the first things that we change. And so we set out to start learning Swahili, and the committee started learning first to set an example. And we met every morning at 7:30 for a 15-minute Swahili lesson. So now we're ready to share it with the other elders. And once we get our school, our community going, that will be a language that will be taught, so that we have what an old friend called, we can have cultural privacy. I don't know if you've traveled abroad and you're among people who are speaking other languages in Africa or even in other Caribbean countries, people can be talking, and they can be talking about you and you making decisions for you, and you don't even know what's going on because you don't speak the language. So the language is really important. But in learning about Kiswahili, we learned much of the culture. For example, we learned that people are addressed with titles, Mama and Baba and Dada and Ndugu, so that people are always showing respect for everyone, and that the titles are according to your position as well as according to your age. So an elder woman is not addressed as sister. A younger woman is addressed as sister. An elder woman is addressed as mama. And so we began to learn the cultural nuances. If you go into a shop to buy something and you don't speak and say hujambo or barigani or some greeting, you don't get any service. So then we realized that we had to expand the language committee to include culture, because the two go hand in hand. So we are continuously learning and planning making long-term plans on how we can get Swahili speaking spoken by the people of African descent. Actually, there's an international organization of Africans in the diaspora known as ADDI, and they established Kiswahili as the diaspora language. And I think that was really appropriate because Kiswahili is not a tribal language. The other African languages are languages of a particular tribe, and Kiswahili is an international language on the continent of Africa. So that's another very important reason why Kiswahili would be adopted as the diaspora, the African diaspora language. So things are on the move with the Culture and Language Committee. And, you know, Dr. Jane, I think I'd like to just share the purpose statement of the Sankofa Council, because it's also an example of Imani, in that we have enough faith that we can come together and start building or building onto our cultural institution. So is it okay if I read that purpose statement?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee is an ever-evolving community dedicated to cultivating Sankofa, the reclaiming of our African memory, our African governance, and our African spirituality to provide a healing and empowering environment for people of African descent globally. Through an immersive exploration of study and practice, Dr. Karenga talked a lot about practice. We exemplify the principles of Nguzo Saba, which provide moral and unifying values as the foundation for constant movement towards restoring our people to our traditional greatness. And I think our traditional greatness is another thing we have to have. We have to believe with all our hearts in. First of all, believe that we are traditionally great, and then believe that we can restore that greatness. We study and exemplify the ancient laws of Ma'at that allowed our ancestors to survive, flourish, and pass on a legacy of greatness, and to interact harmoniously with the world by honoring the universal consciousness in all of creation. We contribute the skill sets that we have acquired as we seek ways to share with our descendants the principles that have historically been our strength, like Mama Efua was talking about, and that have sustained us through captivity, colonization, and acculturation. In that order, we are dedicated and committed, that's that Imani, we are dedicated and committed for as long as it takes to fulfill this purpose. Wow. I didn't even realize that. That's Imani. Yeah. So that's the purpose statement of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. It's awesome.
A lot of work went into that, but a lot of thought as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we do have other committees. Do we have any other committee members that want to share?
Well, I can talk about the committee that I chaired, which was Rites of Passage. And I found that to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Does somebody else want to add something from that committee? Well, there were several members who actually have participated in rites of passage programs. So this was a new concept to me. And we typically think about rites of passage as it relates to young people and learning certain skills, principles that would be helpful for them in their lives. But we talked about engaging in a rites of passage for members of the council. Members of the council assuming their roles as elders and understanding what their responsibilities are is not simply attaining an age, but recognizing certain obligations that you have in engaging with our younger generations so that they are ready to assume, when the time comes, their role as the elders and passing information about culture, about language, about history. And this I found to be most intriguing, as I recognize that many of the elders in my own family are no longer here. I look around for their guidance where I may still receive it spiritually. And I think of the teaching, but not necessarily thinking of myself in the capacity of providing some role with my family as an elder and making use of the information. And so this is among the activities that we have discussed, and how to get the leadership and the direction as part of a rite of passage. So that is what that committee has done. And then we have Mother Afua, who is with us as well, and she has spoken about the committee that she's been involved with, and Brother Kwojo, you have had a committee on healing that that has been extremely active. And are you able to share some things with us about that?
Oh, certainly. And first of all, I'd like to acknowledge the work that the other committees are doing, and including the Rites of Passage Committee. You know, last week we lost two giants in the form of Bishop Tutu and also Maladoma Patrice Somme, who wrote a book. He wrote about rites of passages in his indigenous country in his book, The Healing Wisdom of Africa and of Water and Spirit. And I was on a Zoom call for Kuumba Creativity yesterday, and with the International Black Summit. And when I shared about Sankofa of Milwaukee and what we do, the first question one of the sisters asked was, do we have information about rites of passage? Do we do rites of passage? And so there's a request for information and participation about rites of passage. And it'll be great if if Sankofa could work with the International Black Summit on that. And then our committee was the Healing Committee. We started out last March with focusing on fathers who were struggling to be involved in their children's lives, and many of them needed support in various ways. So we created a healing slash empowerment circle. And we met, we actually provided three circles, virtual circles for healing and empowerment. And out of participating in those circles, after each one, we came away with gaining new insight on how to support that parenting process when people are co-parenting and struggling with co-parenting. And that committee was ended up attracting fatherhood initiatives from all around the country, in California to the west, and New Jersey, and some of the best people in the nation doing what they do. We meet every Wednesday for 90 minutes, and it's turned into a real community right now. And now we got brothers involved from London. And with the platform of the International Black Summit, we're looking to have an international impact throughout the African diaspora. That's the vision right now. But that started out of the Sankofa Healing Committee, which now has blossomed into this possibility of an international community in support of parenting.
Thank you. That's so important that you've shared it. It certainly is an area that has been in need of attention. And I'm glad that Sankofa Council of Milwaukee has played some role through our members who are representing the thoughts that we are sharing amongst one another. And so that is fabulous. To know.
The other member of Sankofa who was actively involved in that committee was Dr. William Rogers, who is busy right now making sure that we're on the air, right? So I don't know if he'll be able to talk, but he has been integrally involved in that committee as well, and he's kind of like the spiritual elder in the committee, and when we have our circles, he is the one who pours the libation for those circles. So the brothers love him, and we've embraced each other, especially Dr. Rogers.
Thank you for sharing that. And Mama Sarta Akhti, you've had a committee that you've been working with, and besides providing cohesiveness for our group and keeping us on track, and which you've done a beautiful job of allowing us to move about our task in a harmonious manner. And that's no small feat for any group. But you've been working with African Affairs and Development. And can you please share with us a bit about what that committee has been involved with?
Well, thank you, Dr. James, for that for that accolation. Thank you. The African Affairs Committee purpose was to provide a connection to the worldwide view of African affairs through history, education, commerce, and economics. In our work, I must say that the basis of and the creation of our committees came out of our study of the Nguzo Saba principles. And through that work, there was an identification of a book that was written by Dr. Arianka Chihombra. I can't say it. Dr. Arianka, who wrote the book of Africa 101, The Wake Up Call, which, of course, we had to have a connection to what's going on in Africa. What happened? How did we get here? How did Africa get in a place where we were able to be taken out as slaves, and how we need to come back together, understanding what's happening there, what has happened there, and understanding what we've gone through here, and then making that connection. And it's interesting that that same concept that Marcus Garvey had is the coming back together. That was 100 years ago during the 1920s. We're now in the 2020s, and there is a movement of, which is called repatriation back to Africa. And so we thought it was important for us to know and understand and share information about how we got here and our experiences, understanding our experiences from both the continent and the U.S. And so in that, the purpose of the committee is to provide a platform for the discussion with institutions that advance the general welfare of Africans on the continent and in the diaspora, a ways of maintaining ties with institutions on matters of mutual interest. Some of us may not go back to Africa, but we may need to connect with Africa. Africa is changing, and it too is recognizing that it needs to separate, the shackles that bind Africa. The countries are now working on becoming one and working on doing that. And so raising awareness of civic, economic, commercial, education, and development of Africa in the diaspora. And so through reading the African 101 was our beginning base that brought us to this point of needing to have this African Affairs Committee and understanding, and educating ourselves on Africa, and hopefully doing the reverse for Africa to understand our challenges as well.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And it really demonstrates that there's some great deal of interconnectedness of the various committees, and the same principles are weaved throughout those committees. They are separate to some extent to allow us to work with them more easily, but there is still the connectiveness. And I'm going to just go over very quickly that which we're in right now, and that is the radio broadcast, which is just one part, as you can see, of the participation that we have had together as a council. All of our programs are discussed, are recommended by members of the council, as well as the invitation of our guests who are invited based upon their experience or expertise on a particular topic, allowing them to share information with our community that serves to carry an idea to a broader audience. And I always have noted that the guests have done such a wonderful job as they convey certain concepts to us in a way that is, we hope, understandable and relevant to the type of things that we encounter that people are challenged with. And I've been able to, as have the other members, brought topics up that we feel are ones that people should know about. And I have been able to utilize this particular platform as a means of communicating areas that pertain to our health, which is particularly germane during the pandemic. And it probably is not always very popular or things that we would like to talk about, but they are relevant nonetheless. So we have been busy, and we are happy to share what we've been doing. We extend an invitation to others who may be interested in some of these topics, who are seeking to learn more from the other members, or who would like to share some of their experiences. We have felt this topic was, as well as that of Imani, was important enough that we have devoted this time to this topic, and we are happy that you have joined us and were willing to learn more about Kwanzaa as we've reflected on that, as well as learning more about the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. We remind you that we have a email address of Sankofa Council, mke@gmail.com. And we encourage you to reach out to us should you have items that you have questions about or that you'd like to comment about. We passed over our sponsor, but we have EDOC Advice, who is one of our sponsors, as well as the Finley Medical Clinic. And we did hear from Patricia Taylor and the ebook that she wanted us to know about. And we welcome other sponsors to join us. We thank you for joining us today, this first day of the new year, 2022. I thank all of the Sankofa Council for its support of this program and for sharing their vision for unity following Afrocentric principles and helping us to learn and use those principles in our lives.
We look forward to bringing to you more programs that we hope you will enjoy. Visit our sponsor and the Findlay Medical Clinic, the EDOC Advice. Good night. Stay safe. The Sankofa family and all of you, until next time, your hosts have been Queen Mother Shabaka, Mother Asarta Ankti, Mother Efua Mayat, Baba Kojo Robinson, and Dr. Janine James.
Y'all ready?
Oh my.